You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect. All right, confession time. How many of you, you have two options, I'll give you two chances to vote. How many of you love the game of Monopoly? Raise your hand. All right, good. The finance guy does, that's good. How many of you, when you hear the game Monopoly, you're like, I just don't have that much time in my life to commit to this thing where everybody just slowly dies at the end. The winner becomes dominant, but then, you know, at the end, somebody is just dying a slow, painful death, especially when you're down to two players. Like, that's just the way it is. So this is the game of Monopoly, and apparently these days, back in my day, it ended at $500, but these days, apparently, it goes to $1,000, inflation or whatever. But in the game of Monopoly, you know, you play, and you play to win money, to win the Monopoly money. And imagine if I was obsessed with this game, and all I would do was play Monopoly. I played it all the time, and every time I'd win a game, I would take the money and pocket it. You know, I'd set it aside because I've got my money, and I would play it all the time. And it was time for my kid's game, but you know what? Sorry, kids, I gotta play Monopoly. I gotta get the money. And I keep playing it. And when I'm not playing it, all I can do is think about playing it. And I stay up late at night, missing out on sleep because I've gotta play Monopoly because I gotta make the money. I've gotta earn the money from the game, and I get up early and play. I skip exercise. Who needs exercise? Because I've got to play. And I don't spend time with God because I've got to play Monopoly. And it's important to play this game to get the money. And of course, I don't come to church because, you know, I've got to play Monopoly. And it's cool because God will understand because Monopoly, like, right? Come on, God. And so we skip church and we. Just obsess over it. And maybe we do play with people. And when we play with our friends or our family, we are cutthroat. And we say things and do things that we wouldn't normally say or do to people we care about. But when it comes to the game of Monopoly, you got to get the money. And so we say those things and tear them down. And of course, if you lose, you get angry and you get mad at God. And God, why would you do this to me? But everything comes back to Monopoly and winning and playing and winning and playing. And you keep doing that and dude, you get a stack. You've got a stack of money. And after years and years and years and years of playing this, your kids are grown up, they're gone. Your marriage, well, it wasn't as important as Monopoly. God, definitely not as important as Monopoly. And so the time comes and you're done. You finish playing, and you take all of your hard-earned Monopoly money, and you go to the store, and you're like waving the money in the air, you know, maybe doing the flicking the money thing out, because you're like, wow, you know what? That super high-end technology, I'm buying it. Oh, and that fancy car, I'm getting it. And that house that is way nicer than anything I ever need, but it doesn't matter because you know what? I got the dough. And you'd go to the register. You know, you wouldn't go to a register to buy a house. That would be weird. But you go to the register at the technology store, and you're like, oh, how many of these 500 puppies is it going to take? Because I got them all. And you put them in front of the person at the register, and they're like, what? That's funny, sir. So we take major credit cards and checks will work, or cash, of course, but cash that tends to be, you know, green. And he's like, oh, I'm like, oh, I got that. I got green cash. Sir, that's not real money. And you say, no, but you don't understand. I've been spending my lifetime earning it. I've been working hard. I've been playing hard. And everything came down to getting this money. And now I've got it. And now it's time for me to spend it. And they say, sir, your money has no value here. And okay, seriously, you don't get it. Like, I've worked hard for this. I've sacrificed. My kids don't even know my name, but you know what? I've done that. And I've made this money. And of course, eventually security would be called. Or they'd just say, sir, would you kindly put that technology back? And by the way, guys over there, don't give them a test drive because it's not real money. And of course, nobody would accept it because it's Monopoly money. It's just fake. It has no value. And of course, when you play the game of Monopoly, at the end of the game, you don't take the money with you. It all goes back in the box because the game ends because the value of this only exists right here on this game board. And yet, when it comes to real money with green on it, a lot of us treat money the same way. Because we go, okay, you know, yeah, hey, sorry, kid, I get it, but dad's got to work late tonight, just don't bother me, okay? And sorry, wife, like, hey, it's for you. We need this money. We need to earn this money so we can get the things that we need, so we can provide for the needs of our family. And God's cool with this. He understands because God clearly said you need to provide for the needs of your people. And yet, we spend all this time investing in green money that is legal tender in the United States of America, but it does not have real value into eternity. And so we get to the end of our life and we're like, God, look at all the money we've got. And God's like, that is Monopoly money. What are you doing? You didn't invest in anything that actually mattered. You spent your life pursuing fake, valueless pieces of paper that don't matter in eternity. And again, you're like, oh, that's kind of an extreme situation. But is it? And I'm just going to be blunt right now. How many people aren't in their seats right here because they're working? Well, you don't understand. My job requires, okay, all right. I don't understand, but I'm just asking the question. How do we perceive money? Because we need to have more and we need to get it. And again, we'll come to this a little bit later. We need to provide for our needs. I have got a family I need to care for. That's my responsibility as a parent. And yet, we keep pursuing this green piece of paper. And by the way, like, I don't think this could happen. I mean, not at least, well, it could happen. I don't think it would happen. But like, if, I don't know, China takes over tomorrow, all of your green paper is worthless. Do you realize that? That if we become a part of the People's Republic of China by force tomorrow, nobody, your green paper is going to be worthless. And the same thing happens when we look at eternity. And we spend a lifetime. I mean, seriously, we talked about this the very first week of the series about our priorities. And job, spending time working, was near the top. And we're going to do a series on Proverbs, Wise Up Again, over the next 2 months. And one of the themes that you see, can you back me down a little bit? I'm a little fidgety. One of the themes that you see in Proverbs repeatedly is laziness is a problem. So it's not that we shouldn't work, but what is our goal? And again, we're doing this series on Fire. And if you're a follower of Jesus, this is for you. If you're not a follower of Jesus, if you're listening, watching online, if you're in the room and you're like, I'm not really sure about this, that's cool. Just, I'm not talking to you. But for those of us that are followers of Jesus, there's some questions we need to ask and say, am I really on fire for him? We like to say we are, but again, as we talked about the very first week of the series, we like to say that God is the most important, but yet there's never room for him in the jar. He's always the last piece that goes in. And so giving and how we look at money is also a way that someone on fire, like that is how someone is on fire determines, or let me say this, how they pursue money determines how on fire they are for Jesus. Let's put it that way. And we spend all this time and this effort getting this stuff that has absolutely no value afterwards. So, the point this week, when it comes to this idea of being on fire, is that someone on fire doesn't just make money. Like, making money, again, there are principles, there are biblical concepts about making money. And if you're a guest here, or if this is your first time watching or listening, you're like, oh, good, another church talking about money, because that's what churches do. Let me tell you about this church. This church talks about the Bible. And Jesus is in the Bible. And Jesus talked about money more than anything else. He talked about money more than any other earthly concept. So if he did that, then we're going to do that. And so someone on fire doesn't just make money. They invest in eternity. They invest in eternity. And so this idea is saying, okay, what if the things that we did here with our Monopoly money were not about now, but what if we use this for something for the future? That we looked and said, okay, everything I have isn't about now, because at the end of the day, no matter how much Monopoly money I make, they're not going to take it at the store. I'm not going to be able to buy it a car with it. I'm not going to be able to use it at Amazon, because it's just Monopoly money. As a matter of fact, you all have a piece of Monopoly money on your seat for you to take home as a reminder. And I had to buy that Monopoly money with real money. And conveniently, you know, it's a good thing for our budget and for Justin and Dawn. I did not pay the value on the face of the money for it. So we are still financially in a good spot. I think it was less than $10. But this idea is saying, what does it look like to say, no, I'm not just looking at making money and collecting it now, because all you're doing is getting Monopoly money. But what does it look like to invest in eternity? And that's what we're going to be talking about. And Justin already talked about it multiple times. You've had your shot, but here's the YouVersion QR code for the notes, because there are a bunch of things today specifically that I am not going to address completely. There's some larger passages that I'm going to summarize, and so you're going to have them in the notes right there. That's going to be a great tool for you in your prime groups this week for the discussion guide. So we'll turn on the house lights if you have a paper Bible there. I think that's the top row there. There we go. But the notes are going to be there, and so you can open them. And we're going to look at a passage here that Christina already read, and I blocked the screen with my table, so that's why she couldn't read half of the verse. But the thing I want to talk about is the classic thing in Monopoly is that, you know, every time you would – it was something you did every turn every time around the board. What did you do when you went around the board? There was a place that you went to. It was called passing – go. And what happens when you pass go? You collect $200. Has anyone played? Apparently the new version, they've like increased things. Is it still $200 in the new stuff? Okay. All right. Maybe all of you like the old version anyway. But so this idea of pass and go, collecting $200. And so we're going to talk about do not pass go. Do not collect $200, because this money isn't going to last. This money isn't going to matter into eternity. And I want to talk about in this passage that we're looking at a comparison that Jesus makes between treasure versus trust. Treasure versus trust. And again, we're going to look at these two halves of it. I saved that for later. Okay. Treasure versus trust. First of all, Jesus talks about storing treasure. And we're going to be in Matthew chapter 6. If you have, again, if you're in the notes, it's right there for you. Matthew 6, and I'm breaking it down into pieces. And if you have a paper Bible, or if you're listening or watching online and you don't have the notes in front of you, if you're driving your car while listening to this, please do not open to Matthew chapter 6. But Jesus talks about storing treasure. And this is actually almost a continuation of the passage we looked at last week, where this is the Sermon on the Mount. And this meant that Jesus was giving a sermon on a mountain. So they called it the Sermon on the Mount because he shared a lot of interesting and important things. But he talks about this idea of treasure. And he says here in verse 19 to 21, he says, do not store up for yourself treasures on earth where moths and vermin destroy and where thieves break in and steal. He says, don't save Monopoly money. Don't do that. And, you know, Monopoly money eventually will corrode. We spent this weekend with our family for Kendra's parents' 50th wedding anniversary. We rented an Airbnb or a Vrbo, I don't know what it was. It was awful. Like, it was one star. the whole place, like the pictures, they clearly took those pictures like 10 years ago and haven't done a thing since. Paint's peeling, mildew on the wall, units, air conditionings weren't working. The dishwasher just had a giant pool underneath it and it didn't run. And we had 20 people there. That's a lot of fun with no dishwasher. So that was messed up. Like, that is clearly Jesus saying, like, this kind of stuff, it's just going to wear away. And, rust, I am not in a very good, have a very good relationship with rust related to multiple vehicles that are rusted, and I'm sure you've had the same thing. And Jesus says, why are you investing in these things that don't last? Why are you, don't store up treasures that are like monopoly money. And the interesting thing is, he says then, well, not interesting, he goes on and says, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven. And there's a really cool thing here that I wanted to highlight. This was written in Greek. That was the language that they wrote in. And the word store up that is used here, the Greek word is, I say it the right way, thesaurizo. It's where we get the word thesaurus. Thesaurus. A thesaurus is like a dinosaur, right? Thesaurizo. And the word store up used is also the same word they use for treasure. And so something that is treasured is something that is stored up. And something that is stored up is a treasure. And so it's the same word. It's not like a separate word, like, hey, don't store up for yourselves, you know, a box of gold. Like, that's what I only imagine, like a gold box that has like a fancy little lock that flips off and goes, you know. And he says, don't store up for yourselves store ups, or don't treasure for yourself treasures, because the word means the same thing. He says, don't do it for things on earth, but store up treasures in heaven. Eternal value. He says, don't just spend time on monopoly money. Because it's not going to matter. It doesn't have any value. It says, store for yourselves treasures in heaven where moths and vermin do not destroy, where thieves do not break and steal. And, again, I already alluded to our financial advisor in the room. If you have something that continually keeps its value and will never degrade, that's a wise investment. Is that fair to say? Something that never loses its value is a wise investment. Yes, that is a great investment. And Jesus says, because where your treasure is, there your heart is also. So he says, here's the deal. You and I, we protect what we love. Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. We protect what we love. And yet, we end up protecting things and we love them that lose their value. I just talked to my mom yesterday, and she was telling me they have a timeshare. They have a timeshare. And part of the timeshare is that they do this presentation every so many months that they're with their timeshare thing. And they give them these Visa gift cards. And my parents will get these Visa gift cards, and they're like, well, we'll save them for the occasion, for an occasion, for a moment, for whatever that occasion is. And my mom said, Sean, we have some that expired 10 years ago. And we're talking hundreds of dollars that just expired. And that's exactly what our investment on this earth is. It's going to expire. So why save up something that's going to expire? And Jesus, again, saying, where your treasure is, there your heart is also. The things that we protect are the things that we love. What we protect is what we love. And my question to you is, what do you protect? Are you more worried about the fact that someone in this building put the very first dent and scratch on the side door of our new car? It's a true story. There's a dent on our door that appeared in church. And are we going, oh no, what's wrong with you people? I hate you all. I'm never coming to this church again. I mean, that would be a problem on multiple levels if I never showed up again. But like, seriously, is that something I value? And again, I'm not talking about we care for the things, we're good managers. We'll get to that in a second. But like, what do we treasure? What do we protect? What are the things that when someone says, hey, can I borrow that? You're like, no. Well, let me tell you, that has become a treasure. That has become something that your heart is after. And your heart is after that thing more than eternity. So the first thing he talks about is storing treasure. The second thing, and this is so interesting because this passage almost, Kendra and I were chewing on this last week because it almost doesn't make sense. So after storing treasure, and then we're talking about seeing treasure. And this is the part that doesn't quite make sense. Because when you look at the passage, you're like, what are you saying, Jesus? But when we look at it from the perspective of, no pun intended, how we see treasure. In verse 22 to 23, Jesus says this. He says, the eye is the lamp of the body. If your eyes are healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eyes are unhealthy, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness? And as you read this in context, you're like, Jesus, what just happened here? Why did we suddenly change course in talking about optometry or ophthalmology or optics? Like, what just happened? And this, if you just kind of read it straight through, you're like, what? But if you think about the bigger picture, Jesus is talking about how we see treasure. He says, how do you view the things of this earth? How do you view your money? How do you see it? Do you see it as something that is merely a tool for eternity? Or do you see it as something that that matters for now? And he's saying that if your perspective, the way you see treasure, is that this is so important, it's so important. He's like, your eyes are full of darkness. You're seeing it the wrong way. And if you spend your lifetime pursuing this, you're going to get to the end and it's all going to go back in the box. You're going to get to the end and you're going to show up somewhere and say, hey, let me cash this in. And they're going to say, no. And your response is going to be, but I spent my life doing it. And Jesus is saying, well, it's because your eyes were wrong. You were seeing this whole thing wrong. You saw this as important for now instead of seeing things for eternity. So Jesus talks about that. And my question is, how do you see treasure? How do you see value? Is it in the money and stuff that you have? Like, is that what, I mean, we talk about net worth, right? None of that has to do with anything related to eternity. None of that has anything to do with how many people in your family love you. None of that has to do with how many people say, you know what, every time I'm around them, they just make me feel better. So how do you see value? Is it about your net worth? Do you feel like you need more? You can go to the next slide for me, Luke, there. When it comes to seeing treasure, do you feel like you need more? Like, I don't have enough. And the answer probably is yes. You're probably not going, I'm good. And we'll talk about that in a moment. But how do you see treasure? Do you feel like you have more? Do you feel like you don't have enough? And there in your notes, there's this statistic I just heard a couple of weeks ago, that if you make $32,000 a year or more, which for Mifflin County is probably an average income. For places like Dallas, it's probably like nowhere near. It's way below average. But if you make $32,000 a year, so if you add up what you make in the course of a year, you are in the top 5% of income earners in the world. You're in the top 5% of income earners in the world. $32,000, which really isn't, again, when you look at incomes around this country, even in the area, like, it's not that much money. And yet, someone that makes that much or more is in the top 5% of income earners in the entire world. And yet, we're like, we don't have enough. I need more Monopoly money. I need more. But that's because we're seeing treasure the wrong way. If you don't see clearly, you'll keep getting more and more and more of this, thinking that this is what matters. You keep thinking that this is what has the value. Then the third thing that Jesus talks about is serving treasure. How do we serve treasure? And Jesus goes into verse 24. He says, no one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot. You see that word? That's not, you might not. You ought not. You should not. Maybe not. You cannot serve both God and money. And Jesus is talking here about when we put these two things up, saying, okay, which one is the priority? Because if you're serving God, you can't be pursuing this. And if you're pursuing this, you can't be pursuing God. You can't be serving God. Because if money is your goal, then you are serving it. And you are doing what it requires. And it requires things such as overtime and more hours and time away from family. And it requires skipping church. And it requires you to not have, you know, be involved in a prime group because, you know what, I just don't have time for that because I have to work some more. I have to carry two or three jobs. We add all this stuff. And I'm just saying, and you can give me excuses and reasons, and some of them are valid, and most of them are not probably, as we'll get to in a moment. But the reality is that if you're serving your money, you cannot serve God. You cannot do that. And if you're serving God, if you're pursuing Him, if God is your goal, then you're serving Him and you're doing what He desires, which means you're sacrificing and you're giving away your money and you're meeting needs. And giving this stuff away is actually a good thing because it doesn't have value. So that's also wise financial stewardship, wise wisdom. That's redundant maybe. Say, I'm giving away something that doesn't have any value. And the point here Jesus is making is that you cannot hoard and give at the same time. You can't. It is absolutely impossible. As soon as you start giving, you are no longer hoarding. And as soon as you stop giving, you start to hoard. Like, you can't do both. And that's what Jesus is saying. You cannot serve both God and money. And so we just need to decide, are we going to serve our treasure? Are we going to serve this earthly meaningless stuff? Or are we going to serve God? And so that's how Jesus wraps up this idea of treasure versus trust. So now let's look at the trust side of the coin. The trust side of the equation. The first thing is that we can trust God for food. And I would like all of you, you can write down trust for food. It's there. Fill in the blank. We good? Now I want you to look at this verse on the screen. Matthew 6, verse 25 to 27. Jesus just finished saying that it's important how you see treasure, how you serve, that you don't serve treasure, that you don't store up the wrong kind of treasure. He says all this. He says, don't pursue money, don't pursue money, don't pursue money, don't pursue stuff, don't pursue all these things. And our brains, our human brains, and Jesus' audience was a human, were humans as well, are going, yeah, but God, if I don't, then what about? If I don't, then what about them? Then what about food? Then what about my family? Then what about the needs? Then what about, then what about? So Jesus says, you cannot serve God and money, therefore, and many times that this passage is taught, and I've taught it this way too, is we separate that first part. That's another point for another day. And then this is a point for another day. But Jesus brings them together. This is together and says, therefore, I tell you. He says, therefore, do not worry. Therefore, I tell you, do not worry about your life. That's a very important. He says all the reasons. He says, don't worry about your life. He says, don't worry about what you will eat or drink or about your body or what you will wear. He says, isn't that life more than food anyway? And the body more than clothes? Look at the birds of the air. They do not sow or reap or store away in barns. They don't work overtime. They don't have a place where they store all their stuff. They don't have a checking account. They don't have a retirement account. They don't have any of those things, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. And they're just birds. Another time Jesus says they're, you know, what, two pennies for, or one, two birds for a penny? Like that's how valuable a bird is in the scheme of creation. And he says, aren't you more valuable than they are? He says, can any one of you, by worrying, add a single hour to your life? So Jesus is saying, just trust God. I know I just said, don't place all your money, all your effort and energy into these treasures, into this monopoly money. And I know that's hard. He says, but just therefore, I'm going to say, trust God. And God is going to provide for your food. And that's one of the big excuses that we hit right at the heart. People say, well, I got to eat. I got to work because I got to eat. And again, I'm not saying you sit around and you don't do anything. Again, Proverbs, there are a whole lot of things biblically about this. Jesus talks about that too. But when it comes to obsessing and saying, I'm doing everything I can to make this monopoly money, what if I don't do that? How am I going to eat? And Jesus says, look, trust your Father. Trust God. Just look at the birds. They're not starving. They're eating. They're surviving. And God cares about you so much more than those birds. So don't worry about it. You're not going to add anything to your life. Say, I'm going to give. I'm going to invest in eternity. And I'm going to trust God for my needs now. So trust God for food. Very practical thing. Then Jesus says to trust God for clothes. Again, another practical thing. I'm glad you're all clothed. And, you know, it's summer season eventually, I think. So clothing, you know, we don't wear as much of it. But definitely in the winter, I think we're all grateful for clothing. I mean, we're all great. Anyway, yeah, we'll just leave it there. But clothing is important, right? It's not something we can just go without. This is not a clothing optional church, okay? That's not how we roll. But it's needed. It's a need. And Jesus says, that's another thing. People are going to be like, but what about the things that I need? Jesus is like, just trust God. Trust God for your clothes. And in verse 28, he goes on and says, why do you worry about clothes? See how the flowers of the field grow? And this is a perfect time of year for that. Look out and see the beautiful flowers that are growing. They don't labor or spin. They're not working behind the scenes. They don't have overtime. They don't have paychecks. They don't have salaries. And yet I tell you that not even Solomon in all of his splendor was dressed like one of these. And he's using Solomon because Solomon was crazy rich. Was he an Asian? No, he's more like a crazy rich Middle Eastern. But he was crazy rich. And he says, not even Solomon looks like a beautiful field when all the flowers are blooming. He's got nothing on this. And he said, if that's how God clothes the grass of the field, which is here today and tomorrow is thrown into the fire. And again, like you look out. Like one of my favorite pastimes, and Kurt doesn't do this anymore, this pen passed on, but one of my favorite pastimes is there's this little, like, I don't know what you call it, this little spot in the middle of the roundabout traffic area right outside the window here. The grass grows really, really tall, and then they bring in these massive, massive, like, industrial mower. And it's just fun to watch. I just watching it. And then it's also fun to see, are they going to go up the hill? Are they going to roll over themselves on the hill? Then the best part, too, is watching all the groundhogs and rabbits going, poof! But it's all like, it's grown up. And then in an instant, in a few minutes, all of that stuff is cut down to nothing. And Jesus is saying, like, that's what we do. Flowers, they come and they go. Sometimes we'll, you know, we grow a tree. That's a beautiful tree, but we cut it down and use it for firewood. He says, those things are here and gone. And if that's how he treats them, will he not much more clothe you? And then he adds this little punctuation. You have little faith. Because not trusting God with your money is a lack of faith. And to say I'm a person that's on fire for Jesus, except that I do control my own money because I do need to be a wise steward of all the things that God has given me. And I do need to, you know, I got to eat and I got to provide for my family and I have all these things I need to do. And let me just stop you right there and saying, no, you don't got to provide for your family because God's got to provide for your family. You don't do it at all. Just like the flowers of the field, you could have a heart attack tomorrow. And I would be willing to bet that your family will survive. I mean, they'll be emotionally difficult. I'm not saying, be like, hey, let's move on. Dad's dead. But life goes on and God provides. And so Jesus just hits another main topic. You can trust God for your clothing. And then finally, Jesus says, you can trust God for food, for clothes, and you can trust God for everything. Everything. And this is a classic, like the old infomercials and stuff. But wait, there's more. Like, not only can you trust God for food, trust God for clothes, you can trust God for everything. And that's, Jesus is adding this on. He says, like, so don't worry. He says, do not worry. In verse 31, so do not worry, saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or what shall we wear? He says, don't worry about these things. He says, that's what pagans run after. People that don't follow God, well, let them worry about it because they don't have God they can provide for. They don't believe in God who can trust. They can trust for their needs. He says, but your heavenly Father knows that you need them. He knows what you need. So Jesus says, and we just talked about this a couple weeks ago, but seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. He says, pursue Jesus. Pursue his kingdom. And again, we talked about the kingdom of God. It's everything related to him, saying, God, every dollar I make, I want to use it for eternity. Everything that I have, I want to use it for eternity. Pursue God and say, God, I'm going to use this and I'm going to be crazy. It doesn't even make sense on paper. But then God is going to give you everything you need and more. And Jesus says, and this is the beautiful part. This is the but wait, there's more part. Therefore, don't worry about tomorrow. For tomorrow will worry about itself. Each day is enough trouble of its own. Jesus is saying, look, if you're obsessed over earning all this Monopoly money, you know what that also brings you? Serious worry. Serious worry. Because you're worried about, what if I lose my job tomorrow? What if something changes? What if this happens to, what if my vehicle breaks down? What if we worry and worry? Well, what if I don't take this job because this is my only chance to take that promotion? And if I don't take that promotion, then that, what if? And we worry and worry and worry. And Jesus is saying, not only are you worrying about Monopoly money that's not going to last, but you're stressed out. And Jesus says, look, don't worry about this. Just say, God, I'm going to honor you with all this money and I'm going to use it for eternity. And then you don't even have to worry. God, it's your money. And again, we'll see that in a second. God, it's your money, so it's not my job. I'll trust you. And so we can trust God for everything. So that's the difference between treasure versus trust. Treasure, if we're doing the wrong thing, we're just pursuing Monopoly money. But when it comes to trust, we can trust God for food. We can trust God for clothes. And we can trust God for everything. Because God loves you. And he cares about you and about everything that you need, not necessarily everything that you want. We've talked about that already during this series. And so when it comes to being on fire, if you're on fire, you're not just interested in making money. You're saying, okay, God, I love you. I'm trusting you and I'm going to invest in eternity. So someone on fire doesn't just make money. They invest in eternity. I got to catch up on my notes. Got excited. So, as we've done every week of the series, we're asking the question, am I on fire? Am I on fire? And I can't answer this, as I've said every week. I can't answer this for you. And frankly, I don't care how you answer it in that, like, I'm not like, oh, well, clearly they didn't, you're out, you're in, whatever. Like, there's no judgment here. There's just being real. And if you say you're on fire for Jesus, you need to ask yourself, am I really though? Am I on fire for giving? Is part of this picture. And let me just share some stats. These are probably about 10 years old now, but they're from Relevant Magazine. And this is just interesting stuff. It says that tithers, people that give 10% of their income, and we talked about this during the Churchianity series. Tithers make up about 10 to 25% of a normal congregation in America. Only 5% of the United States tithes, meaning gives 10%, with 80% of Americans only giving 2% of their income. And so that means, on average, the average American Christian, average American Christ follower, gives around 2% of their income. And we've talked about this before, and we're not going to get into that, but tithe kind of being a starting point, 10%, saying what can you do to give more. Interestingly enough, during the Great Depression, so right now the average, or at least 10 years ago, the average American gave about 2.5, average American Christian gave about 2.5% of their income. During the Great Depression, the average was 3.3. And often we're like, well, I don't have enough, so I can't give. And actually during the Great Depression, when people literally didn't have enough, they were able to give more. Interesting food for thought. But here's the thing about the article that I love. It says, numbers like that can invoke a lot of guilt, which isn't really the point. Okay? So, okay, maybe I don't give. Maybe America isn't very good at this. If Christians aren't, whatever. The larger point is, what would happen if believers were to increase their giving to a minimum of, let's say, 10%? So get this. If every Christ follower in America increased their giving to 10%, so there would be an additional $165 billion for churches to use and distribute. $165 billion. for churches to use. The global impact would be phenomenal. Here's just a few things the church could do. $1 billion could fully fund all overseas missions work. Again, as of 10 years ago, that would every mission organization, that would fully fund everything. So Trigo Miel, if there was $1 billion available and part of that was given there, it would cover everything. $12 billion would eliminate illiteracy in 5 years. In 5 years, every person in the world would be able to read. $15 billion would solve the world's water and sanitation issues, specifically at places in the world where 1 billion people live on less than a dollar per day. $25 billion could relieve global hunger, starvation, and deaths from preventable diseases in 5 years. And after all that, $100 to $110 billion would still be left over. And that's if the church said we're going to give 10%. The church around this country. And so, just some interesting things about what does it look like to give. And one thing that we did 10 months ago was we did a thing called the 10 for 10 challenge. And our Churchianity series, we talked about that in September, and here we are in June. So this is the September, October, November, December, January, February, March, April, May, June. 10 months later, and everyone took the challenge. I think most people did. And so we're going to give an extra $10 a week for 10 months and see what God does. And I've heard stories about what God has done in you and how I've given more and it didn't quite make sense on paper. But you know what? God came through because I said, I'm not going to invest in Monopoly money. I'm going to trust God. And God has provided clothing and food and everything you need. And I would encourage you, the challenge technically ends. I would encourage you not to change. But we have seen the amount of money that we have available to do things as a church is changing our budgeting. We have our budget processes going through right now. But we are able to increase our giving to our missions organizations and a lot of areas because of what people have given in just $10 a week for 10 months. And so the whole point is that what does it look like to be someone that gives? You just need to ask these questions. Am I on fire for giving? And I have four questions to ask for you guys to reflect on, for me to reflect on too. I'm not pointing the finger. The first question is, do I realize that all that I have is from God? Do you realize that all that you have is from God? Not most of it, not some of it, all. Like everything you've got, you think, oh, I earned this money. No, you have that because God has allowed you to have that job. Frankly, because God has allowed you to live in this country. God has allowed you to be born in a family that has taught you how to work. I mean, there's all these pieces that come together. You didn't earn that money. God has provided for you, and it's His. All of it is His. And over in 1 Chronicles, and again, I'm going to do a lot of summarizing with some of these passages, but this is when David and the Israelites got together to assemble all the materials to build the temple, the permanent place where they could worship God. And in 1 Chronicles 29, David says this. He says, he's talking to them, they're celebrating all the things that came together, and he says, everything in the heavens and on earth is yours, O Lord. And this is your kingdom. We adore you as the one who is over all things. Wealth and honor come from you alone. So he's saying, everything that's here, God, it's because you gave it to us. And he says, for you rule over everything. Power and might are in your hand, and at your discretion, people are made great and given strength. He says, O our God, it's the prayer. We thank you and praise your glorious name. And look what he says here. But who am I? And who are my people? That we could give anything to you. Everything we have came from you. And we give you only what you first gave us. And so everything you have, and again, this isn't a plea to like, hey, give more money, put more money, feel guilty. But like to recognize that everything you've got is from God. And so for you to hold on to something that He has given to you is rather kind of selfish and arrogant. Say, God, this is from you, and I'm going to give back to you. And in the 10 for 10 challenge, we looked at that passage in Malachi, which is not on the screen, where God says, you know, give me a shot. Challenge it. Take the challenge. Go ahead, test me in this. See if I don't give way back more than you've ever given. And this isn't like if I give $1, I get $2. Nothing like that. But just trust God. Over in Matthew chapter 25, Jesus says this. He tells the story of this parable. And he says, the kingdom of heaven can be illustrated by a story of a man going on a long trip. He called together his servants, and he entrusted his money to them. while he was gone. And again, this is a demonstration of what Jesus has done. And the point is, he gives out money to these different servants of his and says, this is my money. It's your job to be responsible for it. I'm going to be gone and you're responsible. Jesus has gone, ascended to heaven and has given us his treasures and his riches. He's given them to us and said, it's your job to manage my money. And so it says here, jumping over in a few verses, after a long time, next slide there for me, Luke, sorry. After a long time, the master returns from his trip and he called them to give an account of how they used his money. And some used it and invested it, some wasted it. One wasted it. And at the end of the parable, Jesus says, to those who use well what they are given, even more what they are given will be given. And the whole point Jesus was making here is that the master has left and he has given us, his servants, his money to manage for him. Our job is to manage it for him. And again, drawing more attention to our financial planner in the room, if he invested my money for his own benefit, he would be fired by me, no question, but probably be arrested for embezzlement or all sorts of other federal crimes. That's not his job. It's my money. He needs to invest it for me. And our job for the kingdom of heaven is to invest the money that God has given us for him. So, do you realize that all that we have is from God? And we did a series called Offer a few years back. And we talked about this during the Offer series. That's on the slide, Luke. But we're just the managers of what he has given us. It's his game to begin with. It's his monopoly game. He's like, he invites us to play and says, I'm going to give you out. You know, what is it at the beginning? Let's see if I can do it. Everybody got two 500, two 100, two 50s, six, five 50s, five 20s. What was six? Six was 20s. I thought it was six 20s. Yeah. And then five 10s, five 5s, and five 1s. And see, there you go. And that's kind of God saying, here's what you've got because it's mine. You need to use it wisely for me. So that's the first question. Do I realize that all I have is from God, that we are managers of it? The second question that you need to ask, and again, I am not at all. First of all, just to be clear, I know nothing of what individuals give at MC3. And the only people that know that are our treasurer and our bookkeeper. That is not public knowledge, and that's not because we don't care about, and you'll get your year-end giving reports and all that stuff. It's important to manage it as leaders. But I don't need to know. So I'm not here going, oh, I'm watching you. I hope you're really paying attention today. Like, this is just for you to say, am I on fire or not? Am I on fire for giving? I realize that all I have is from God. The second question is, am I content? Am I content with what God has given me? If it's all from him and you're not happy with what you've got, then you basically need to go to God and say, God, you suck. Because you haven't given me what I want. You haven't given me what I need. I don't have enough. I'm not content with what I've got. And in Philippians chapter 4, Paul writes it this way to the church in Philippi. He says, I know what it is to be in need. And Paul has a story. There is a history here. Paul's got the baggage to go with it. He says, I know what it is to be in need. And I know what it is to have plenty. He says, but I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation. Whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want, he says, I can do this, all this through him who gives me strength, which we talked about this passage in our crop series, because people are like, I can do all things through God who gives me strength. Time out. What is the context? The context is you can trust God because God will give you the strength to do it. You can be content when you've got plenty because God will give you the desire to be content. He will give you the strength to do it. You can be content when you don't have enough because God will give you the strength. That's the context for this verse. And by the way, I don't know if you've ever heard this statement, but a glutton thinks about food just as much as a starving person. Because we think, oh, well, we're starving, we need food. Well, someone that has way more food than they need still thinks about food. And so this idea of I don't have enough, I have too much. No, let's be content. Whether we've got enough food or not enough food, trust God. He will give you the strength to do it. Over in 1 Timothy, Paul says this to Timothy. He says, godliness with contentment is great gain. He says, this is the win. Contentment, saying, God, I trust you. This is the win. He says, we brought nothing into the world and we can take nothing out of it. I'm pretty sure that the wife of the financial planner in the room, that there is nothing else inside there with those two twins. There is no extra stuff. It's just twins. Just, that's all. Just twins. That's the way we were born. We can't bring anything in the world. We don't take anything out of it. When we die, when we get to the end, it all goes back into the box. The money is valueless. It has no worth. He says, but if we have food and clothing, we will be content with that because God is providing for our needs. So we need to be content. He goes on and explains, those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a trap and into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. These aren't calm, sad, oh, that's not a big deal. These are dangerous words. For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. And we talked about that in the crop series as well, this passage. It's not money. It's the love of money. And he says, some people are going after this. And they're like, I want my Monopoly money. They're eager for money. And they've wandered away from the faith because I've got to provide for my family. I have to have enough to eat. It's okay. God's cool if I don't come and worship with him. It's all right if I don't spend time reading and growing in his word because I need to make money and I want to be a productive person. And Proverbs says, don't be lazy. So come on. And we've wandered away from the faith. And I can tell you, as a youth pastor, that sophomore, junior year, what happens that sophomore, junior year? They turn 16 and they can get their jobs. And when they get their jobs, they vanish. They vanish. Most youth ministries, you've got 6th through 10th graders pretty strong. When you hit that 11th grade, 12th grade year, they vanish. Why? Because they have jobs. Well, you know, I got to work. For what? Because I got to pay for college. You really think that extra 2 hours at $12 an hour is going to change everything? But what if you said, I'm going to be content with what I've got, God, trust God to provide, and I'm going to use those 2 hours to invest in my relationship with him. And I tell you, that is valuable because that's Monopoly money as you're trying to earn. The rest of it is going to last into eternity. He says they've wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. So the first question, do I realize that all I have is from God? The second question is, am I content with what God has given me? And remember, if you make $32,000 or more, you are top 5%, so you probably have enough. The third question is, do I see eternity as more valuable? Do I see eternity as more valuable? And again, this is also in your notes, so I'm going to summarize the story here. But the short version is, there was this guy that had a manager managing his money. And he found out that this manager was cheating him. His financial planner was cheating him. And he said, dude, you're going to get fired tomorrow. And the financial planner guy was like, oh, man, if I get fired, what am I going to do? Because I'll lose my credibility. So here's what I'm going to do. And he went to everybody that owed his master some money and said, okay, you owe $1,000, make it $800. We'll square it. No, it's cool. I'm in charge of the money for today. So we'll just say you only owe him, you know, $800. Oh, you owe him $500? Let's make it $200. I can legally square all this away today. I know it's sneaky, but that's okay. And eventually, the next day, the guy gets fired. And it says here in the next slide there, Luke, he says, the rich man had to admire the dishonest rascal for being so shrewd. And it is true that children of this world are more shrewd in dealing with the world around them than are the children of light. Jesus is saying the rich man wasn't happy that the guy cheated him, but he was going, wow, look at this. This guy is being sneaky and using this Monopoly money to make more Monopoly money. And he says people that get sneaky and try to do this to earn more, and yet look at the church, followers of Jesus, they aren't. Not sneaky, but they don't try to do what they can to change someone for eternity. He says, here's the lesson. Use your worldly resources to benefit others and make friends. Then, when your possessions are gone, they will welcome you into an eternal home. Jesus is saying this, if you can earn this Monopoly money and then use it to say, hey, let me tell you about Jesus. There's an opportunity. Let me give to this need. Let me help out this missions team. Oh, you have a need and you don't even go to church. Let me help meet that need. And that could be the bridge where they're like, hey, I don't remember much, but I remember I had a really hard time. And that person, my neighbor that went to church, did something for me. And I know that's happened here at Prime Groups, where Prime Groups are like, this person doesn't go to church, but they have a need and we're going to help them out. And they're like, what? Why would you do this to me? Let me tell you about Jesus. Let me tell you about eternity. Let me tell you about something more than Monopoly money. And so we need to say, do we see eternity? The question is, do you see eternity as more valuable than this world? We did a couple of years ago, I think it was during the offer series, we watched a video series called The Treasure Principle in our Prime Groups. And this is a really good book about this idea of what is eternity all about? Does it matter more? And the link to this book is in the notes of you version as well. And then the final question is, am I willing to give it all? Am I willing to give it all? that we see if this is God's money and we're his managers and we need to be content with what we've got. And he says, I want you to use this not for this world now. Be like that, again, not that we're cheating, but be like that rascal that said, oh, I'm going to do all I can to make friends. He says, use your money now to make friends that matter for eternity. Like, if someone says, hey, I can't come to church. It's too hard for me to get there. Well, would you like to borrow my car? If that's what would bring someone to church, would you do it? If you had a family member that has walked away from Jesus and I said today, you can spend $500 and they'll come back, would you pay it? You absolutely would. If I said it'll take $10,000, that's what'll work. Pay the $10,000, they come back to Jesus. You would pay it and you would find out a way to do it. And that's what Jesus is saying when it comes to the seeing eternity is more valuable. So if that's the case, are you willing to give it all? If that is more value, are you willing to give it all? And in 2 Corinthians chapter 9, Paul talks about this. And he says, remember this, and I'm going to summarize the passage. He says, a farmer who plants only a few seeds will get a small crop. And you know that. If you put three seeds in the ground, the most you're going to get is three plants. But if you put hundreds of seeds in the ground, the amount of plants that you're going to get is exponential. So he says, be generous. You need to decide how much you want to give, not because Sean pressured you, not because it's what God said you should do. I mean, maybe that's a good reason. Just be generous. And God's going to provide. He says, God will generously provide all that you need. You give. Trust him. Be generous, be generous, be generous, be generous, be generous. And watch God come through. And he goes on and says that God is the one that provides the seed for the farmer anyway. The reason the farmer has that seed to plant is because God gave it to him. The reason you have what you have is because God gave it to you. So be generous. Are you willing to give it all? Or are you saying, no, I need to hold on to this? Do you want to hang on to your monopoly money when it has no value? And then over in Mark chapter 12, Jesus points out this lady, and you probably have heard this story many times, but people were throwing in large amounts into the temple offering. And this old woman comes up and puts in two very small coins worth only a few cents. That's all it was. And it could be easy to go, oh, well, this lady hasn't given much at all. But Jesus says, look, she gave out of her poverty. She put in everything, all that she had to live on. And so if you're on fire for Jesus, are you willing to give it all? And if you say no, guess where your treasure is? Your treasure is here. And again, I'm not judging you. I'm not looking at you. I need to look at myself and say, am I willing to give it all? If I'm not, I'm saying, okay, I'm storing up treasures on earth rather than treasures that last for eternity. So if you're on fire for giving, those are the four questions. Do I realize that all I have is from God? Am I content with what God has given me? Do I see eternity as more valuable? And am I willing to give it all? Because someone on fire doesn't just make money. They invest in eternity. So would you stand up? Guys, you want to hit the house lights? And we're going to close with a song. And then I'll come back up and pray. That's the question. Do we trust God for everything? All our hopes, all our dreams are in his hand. Are we willing to say? It's not about the monopoly money. God, it's about eternity. It's about changing hearts and lives for Jesus. It's about my own heart and life being on fire for you. Would you pray with me? Father, thank you so much for your word, and thank you for giving us clear instruction. Not easy instruction, but clear instruction. That we don't need to treasure the things of this earth, but we can place our hope and trust in you and treasure eternity, treasure the things that will last forever. And in doing that, therefore, we can trust you to provide for our needs today, for all that we need, and for so much more that we don't need, and you're so gracious in giving it to us. So God, I pray, as we've been praying all series long, that we would look deep in our own hearts. Not at the people next to us, not thinking about the person that should have heard this, or they hope they're listening online, but to look at ourselves and say, God, am I on fire for you? Am I on fire for giving? Do I see money as something that I'm supposed to make? Or do I look at investing in eternity, using this monopoly money for something that will last forever? God, I pray that we would do that as we read, because we can do all things through Christ who gives us strength. Because you will give us the strength to trust you and find contentment in what we have, and therefore investing it in return. Thank you, Jesus, for giving us that hope. Thank you for giving us that help. Help us to honor you with what we have been given by you. In Jesus' name, amen. And as we've been doing with this series, we're reading through the Crazy Love Reading Plan, and that's also in the notes. And I believe we're on day 6 at this point of the plan. Read that one this week. And then also don't forget the prayer cards are out there. If you haven't gotten one, it's a great reminder for your own reflection. Say, hey, am I on fire for Jesus?